This is Rakovic's After Hours.
Welcome to another episode of Ben realizes that he's actually quite reliant on the sound signature of his normal headphones and is thoroughly confused by using a different pair. It is, of course, a music and technology podcast, Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 141. Thank you for tuning in. Our first port of call, Pete. What's been weeking in your happen? Yes.
What's been weeking in my happen?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things was, I don't know about you, but quite often I have a need for fastenings of all different types.
I can't say that I have that need.
Well, one of them, it would be the M3 hex heads that I use in modular cases. For screwing the modules in.
Oh yeah, I forgot you're an Allen key man when it comes to your modular.
But I use fastenings of all different types, nuts, bolts, all the various type of things. And I normally do what I would imagine a lot of people do. They order them from eBay or some other place, some sort of mail order thing.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this week, I had a need for many hundreds of stainless steel M3 iLock nuts.
Sounds quite reasonable.
And I had done my usual by ordering them from a company that I tend to use regularly and have been quite a reliable source of those products. Alas, because I needed them in a hurry, they just didn't turn up. In fact, they still haven't turned up.
How rude.
About over a week later. So anyway, that's something I'll sort out with them. But yesterday, I was in dire need. I had to have these stainless steel nuts to complete a contract which had been outstanding for months, and I was desperate. So typical strategy, I hit the internet, furiously looking around, thinking, who would have dispatched this? Can I overnight them? Looking at all the prices, do I want to pay that much? And I'm frantically looking around. And then eventually I found a retailer, physical retailer, that
was old-fashioned.
14 minutes away from where we're sitting now.
No way.
That was completely oblivious.
Brilliant.
So phoned them up, and this is getting quite late in the afternoon, so things are going to be closing soon, and said, have you got these products? Oh, yes, sir. We've got many hundreds in stock.
We've got them. Brilliant. By the kilogram.
I'll be straight over. So I shot over to this place, and it was in rather a little parade of shops. I think there was a little computer repair shop and a little grocery store, and this little shop that looked like nothing. And I went in there, and they just had all the racks and rows and boxes of every conceivable shape and size of screw.
Ooh.
All the different threads, all the different tops. It was amazing. And the fact they've been there for years, decades, and I was oblivious to their presence, and I've been shipping stuff all up and down the country and all over the place to get hold of this stuff, and I could have just
round the corner.
I could have driven there and just collected it. Yes, it was one of those kind of light bulb moments, thinking this is ridiculous.
It sounds like it's probably got a similar feeling to, was it D&M Tools we mentioned a couple of episodes ago again?
Something like that, but even more old school. You know, all they had was all the racks of all the different fastenings, and then they had old school scales for weighing them when you wanted to sort of separate out a, you know, whatever, they come in boxes of 500 and someone only wants 200 and they've got to weigh them and they want to be able to do that quickly. But yes, it was a revelation. Why didn't I know that you existed? They were very pleasant as well. And ironically, it was even cheaper than mail ordering the stuff.
Yeah.
With the smaller items, the mail order people ship them maybe for free, but they've integrated the cost of the shipping into it.
Yeah.
So it's quite expensive. But yeah, so I'll be shopping there very regularly.
Brilliant. Was it a little independent, been there for 1,000 years?
Yes,
situation?
Exactly. Completely there. Just tucked away. Who would have known? It wasn't even, it was just a little housing estate with a little row of shops.
Nice. Well, I wish them many more years of fantastic utility for the people who need them.
I'll be extending my patronage to them on a regular basis from now on.
Wonderful.
So yeah, I was able to complete the outstanding project, and I shall be delivering all the articles from that contract this afternoon.
At last, you can remove it from your brain.
Yes.
Long time coming.
Yes, it was.
Mm. Any more tales from your week?
I have been really trying to dig down deep and learn blues piano, seriously. Mm. I've had various flirtations with it in the past. But
yeah,
now
you've found quite a few different YouTube channels for consuming such material.
Yes, and now I'm trying to really focus in on it because I tend to be a bit lacking in focus, you know, as a champion procrastinator and such like. We'll have a little dabble and then get bored. But now I'm really, really trying to focus in, trying to develop my left hand rhythmic abilities and really trying to get in there so that I can actually perform reasonably entertainingly.
Nice one. So why did you aim for the blues first?
Well, actually, in real terms, once you sort of got some of the principles, it's one of the easiest techniques on the piano, I believe, that you can develop where you sound quite melodious, quite quickly, very rhythmic. And, you know, once you've cornered the sort of blues scale, and you can do the, or you develop the independence between your left and right hand, it's one of those ones where once you get over the initial hill that you get the results start coming thick and fast.
Nice one.
So there's been a lot of that in between frustratingly trying to get my various bits and pieces together in other departments.
A noble pursuit.
Certainly is.
Wonderful. Tales from my week. Do you remember way back I mentioned I purchased some fancy cinema film?
Yes.
Zilbersalz 35 was the stuff. I'm not even going to try and guess how long ago that was. But finally, all of the photos have been taken. The scans are back. It took a long time because you have to buy them in sets of four and send them back for scanning and developing in sets of four. So if I quickly access my database here, what I can tell you is that there was a delay because they'd upgraded their drum scanner. Doesn't really mean a whole lot to me, but what I do understand is that they have been scanned in 14K resolution, which is frankly excessive and kind of cool. But it does mean that the entire package was 13.3 gigabytes of four rolls of film.
How do they transport that data to you?
That was just a Dropbox.
Okay, a large Dropbox.
A very large Dropbox. And yes, the negatives should be turning up at some point soonish as well. So these files are so large that if you're a Mac person, you'll know that in Finder, you can just press spacebar on an image to kind of open it quickly and you can easily preview files that way. It kind of crashed my laptop trying to do that with one of these files. So 14K, let me actually take a look at what the resolution is. Do you want to hazard a guess at the vertical resolution of this, like your 1080p's and your 2160s and all that?
No, I don't want even a 10. Just far away, let me know.
It is 8,917 pixels tall by 14,204 wide. That's hilarious, especially given that the negative is, you know, this big. So you very quickly find the grain before you find the pixels, which I think really that's as far as you'd ever want to go if you're digitizing these things. Anyway, let me show you one of them. There we go.
Okay. And that's in Scotland, I would assume.
That is indeed from the Scotland project.
It looks like a distillery, in fact.
That is Lagavulin, which went before I went to Isla, I thought, oh yeah, Lagavulin 16, that's my favourite. Actually isn't. My tastes have changed, gone away from the smoky stuff. But that does mean that now I have those photos back. The Scotland project can begin, and I sent a small preview of the kind of format for displaying these pictures to my father-ino. So if you haven't caught this small nugget of project that I'm working on, I went to Isla, visited some distilleries with the father man, we took some photos, I recorded some audio, and we wanted to make a multimedia sensory whiskey tasting musical presentation experience for some of our whiskey friends. So now we have all of the material, we can start packaging it together. Here's a little...
Okay, for a minute there, I didn't think that it was just looked like a white blank piece of paper.
So I've got the field recordings from each particular location we'll be playing in the background. And if you listen, or you heard that one, as each photo appears, the corresponding shutter sound from the camera that took it will appear. The question now is, we've got all these pictures, what are we going to tell a story? Is there going to be narration? I don't know, but there is a weekend booked in the calendar to figure out what on earth we're going to do with all these things.
Do you have sound recordings of those areas as well that you could mix in? So it's going to have all the atmosphere of...
The actual place where we took the photos from is the plan, Stan.
Excellent.
Should be nice. Looking forward to it. And I will play some more of it properly in a future podcast.
You could always do a voiceover for it as well.
That's what we're thinking, but we don't really know what we're going to talk about, because we could always just say, yes, we liked this whiskey. It had notes of something. But I feel like it was such a momentous occasion. I think there needs to be a bit more poetry about it.
I was just about to say, you need it to be quite lyrical.
So we'll have to think up something. My dad is quite an artistic man when he turns his attention to it. He's quite an accomplished, I wouldn't say accomplished because he doesn't do it very often, but he's a very able painter when he feels like it. And he's been a photographer for many a year and has consumed an unhealthy amount of music in his time. So I'm sure there'll be poems in his head somewhere. We'll figure it out. That's basically my week. But we do have some news to turn to next. Let me go and find them.
I was going to ask you a question before we got there. So on the subject of analog photography, I was going to seek your advice in respect to film scanning. I know that you've just done that.
I wouldn't say I'm the best person to be asking, but I will give you all the knowledge I currently possess.
I have a vast amount of negatives that need to be scanned. Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you what the best way to do that. Should I buy some sort of scanner, or would it be more economical to have it done professionally?
Let's find out, shall we? So, the lab that I use, let's see if you can just send them stuff for scanning. How are your negatives stored currently?
In little envelopes, in strips of five or six, I can't remember.
Those plastic wallets with the little sections, okay.
Yeah, that type of thing.
By quite a number. Is this all 35mm rolls, I assume?
Yes.
Roughly how many?
I wouldn't like to calculate it by roll, but it may be several hundred frames.
Okay, several hundred frames. Well, this one is £6.98 per frame.
Ouch.
So maybe not. What I would guess then is that a dedicated 35mm scanner of your own is probably the way to go, because obviously there's flatbed scanners that you can get that are good for film negatives.
Yeah.
But the ones that are dedicated 35mm will do some like auto feed stuff, and you can stick a strip in one side and it will and power through them relatively quickly. With that many, and how tedious it was just to do one roll of film at home myself and edit them, quickest is going to be what you're going to want, I think.
Okay. And I would like something that you're not offering up a camera or a phone, something that's got the whole sensor built into the unit.
Absolutely. I don't think there's a huge number that would be using your own phone or something. The system I've got is that light table, use your own camera, do it yourself type thing, which is relatively achievable if you're doing one roll at a time. You don't have a huge backlog, but there's lots of options. I don't know what's good or what's not, but most certainly an integrated, fully contained 35mm scanner would be the one.
Okay, I'll have to do the research, see what's out there, see how much it is and weigh.
Imagine you'd get something pretty good under £200.
Okay.
I'd say. I don't think you'd need to spend a huge amount.
And what sort of resolution do you think I'd get from something like that? Not 14K, I surmise.
Yeah, thankfully not. You'd run out of hard drive space three rolls in, wouldn't you? Oh, so there's one that I was considering at one point, which I believe is relatively well regarded, which is made by Plustek. That is around £240, and that you certainly feed the film in one side and it goes out the other. Kodak do one, which is £160, which I think is fine. And unless you really want super quality on all of these, that would probably do it. But from my quick jaunt through the forums a while ago, Plustek was a good option. Yeah, so almost, one of the only real options, to be honest, because it's either going to be some kind of high-end Epson flatbed situation or some low-end, budget-friendly £99, £89, ooh, £50, maybe not, Plustek, with a K on the end.
Okay, I shall have a wander around the interwebs a bit later on and have a look.
Yeah, I'm just going to WhatsApp this one to you. There we go. Nice one.
Excellent.
Ping, that was me. To the news! Let's start with this one. Actually, quite a theme of expressive instruments, kind of, this week. So, listeners, frame your minds around the world of Harkin Continuum, Expressive E, Osmos, and other such expressive instruments, and see if you can think, other than obviously pianos and keyboards and stuff, what instruments don't have a solid digital counterpart. There are options like you know, guitars, string instruments, which you could argue don't really have much of a need to be replicated. Obviously, there will be electric additions, pickups and so on for classical instruments. There are wind instruments. Roland do a few, Akai do a few. I think there's only two examples that I can think of for drums. And I'm not talking about electronic kits or like sample pads. I'm thinking, you know, expressive instruments, something really trying to replicate the mechanics and transparent human interactivity of the real deal. There's quite an interesting one that turned up, which is Keda, or Keda, I don't really know. But it is an electronic tabla, like the, is it an Indian instrument? I think it is. So, from the general Indian kind of corner of the world comes the tabla, and somebody's gone and done it. Keda, or Keda, I don't know, K-E-D-A, have an electronic tabla with several different models for subtly different types of drums. I'm very sorry, I don't know the intricacies of such percussion, but there was a pretty cool demo on their website and on their YouTube channel. I'm obviously no expert, but it sounded really quite amazing. And what you don't realize until you come across a lot of this playing and some really good players, how much variety of sound there is in what is quite a simple instrument, and in relatively small movements as well, just in the hand, in the position that they're striking from the center, away from the center, how they're striking, what parts of their hands they're using, and it's doing the thing. It's really cool. I think you should check this out, even if you have no need or reason to play an electronic tabla. It's super cool. I really like the technology here. I was saying the only other one I can think of, we had them at the shop. Is it the Korg Wave Drum? Is that the one? That very rarely appeared in the shop, but it was kind of a hand percussion. It had some sort of a skin type situation. I'm going to have to Google it.
Yeah, I tend not to pay much attention to the physical percussion instruments. I just think, oh, that's to do with the drum department, nothing to do with me.
Yeah, that's why I think I saw one of these once in the shop. But yes, so they will both have, you know, physical modelling type engines at their heart and a really sensitive playing interface, but I think that's super cool. Super cool indeed. Now, for the next one, we're going to have to go back to, I think, 1928. Let me have a look. 1928 indeed, a very early electronic musical instrument, the Onde Martineau. Have you heard of such a thing?
I'm not familiar with that particular name.
The difficulty is, it's a French instrument, and we're English, and of course notoriously terrible at attempting to pronounce French things. So it's O-N-D-E-S, which I believe is Onde, and then Martineau, M-A-R-T-E-N-O-T, Martineau, Martineau, who knows. Either way, influential and awesome, originally vacuum tube powered, but the playing interface is what's pretty cool about this one. For pitch control, you have a metal ring with a string on either side that you kind of move left and right to control your pitch, so you can get those theremin-like glissando-type situations. It also has something that I believe inspired Expressive E and their Touché, but there is a section of the instrument on the left which houses many expressive controls, and it's called the tiroir, maybe. Another French word butchered by me, I'm very sorry. But you use this with your left hand, typically. You've got things like octave controls and various waveform-type switches to change your timbre, and a white doodad, which is a button, in a sense, with quite a lot of travel, where if you think about how the Expressive E Osmos works, you sort of just press the key down and volume could increase smoothly over the travel of the whole key. It's that kind of thing, but for the whole instrument. Now I've refreshed you potentially on the Onde Martineau, I can let you know that Therivox have replicated the oscillator and kept a lot of its performable qualities alive. So later models, I think the seventh version of the original machine, used transistors and such rather than vacuum tubes, and I believe it's that design that they're using. So you have a giant pitch control in the middle and an input which you can control however you like. An interesting performable option is that you have three simultaneous outputs which you can, well, they intend for you to pipe differently in your modular synth. On the original instrument, it would have been that you could use different diffusers, I don't know how they want you to pronounce them. There'd be different resonant devices and speakers and such with which to amplify the machine, but they had different tones. So that's where they're going with that. But your controls are an octave selector, I believe four positions, and then the waveform selection stuff. You have T for Tutti, which is all waveforms, a preset mix, which will override the other switches you may have used. G for Gambe, I have no idea. That is an asymmetrical square wave. You have an 8 for Octavion, which is mainly second harmonics, which is a rectified sine wave. Quite interesting there. This particular waveform has a dedicated level control and CV input for the level. You have N for, this is going to be the most challenging one so far. N for Nasir, maybe. A unique fixed narrow pulse, rich in higher harmonics. C for cru. It's one of those horrible French words with E-U-X. Cru? I've no idea. Either way, it's a hollow sound by a slightly soft-clipped triangle wave. And you have O for ond, a unique sine wave that is pure at higher pitches and gets more harmonically complex in lower pitches. Finally, a small letter G for Petit Gombe is a mellow square wave with a low-pass filter which has a little slider on it. There we go. I am no longer going to attempt to pronounce French words. I'm so sorry. Either way, it's cool that they're replicating this, and there are some pretty great performances online of such an instrument that you should go and find and watch them and see if you want one for yourself. Ooh, interestingly, later models of the Ond Martineau, there you go, I've attempted to pronounce a French thing again, had a typical keyboard on it, but you could do vibrato by wiggling your finger left and right, but the whole keyboard moved to register that vibrato that you're doing. Kind of cool. Once more, Theravox Ond, a new oscillator. A new old oscillator, yes. Okay, here we be. I think we may have mentioned this brand before. Artisan Electronics.
I don't personally recall hearing about it. But...
Let me show you a picture. They had a monosynth, the Nucleus, that appeared.
I have seen that synth before at shows.
Exactly. I believe they crowdfunded it and it didn't quite make it, but they still produced it anyway.
Isn't it digital?
I think it's hybrid.
Okay.
But there's certainly digital in there. Either way, it was quite cool. I think people were relatively interested in it. I personally overlooked it quite horribly, but they now have a polysynth they are currently showing at NobCon 2022, and it's pretty full-featured. I'm going to read you the headline specs, and Pete, see if you can find anything missing, because, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Okay, the standard keyboard. 4 voices of polyphony, but you can buy more voice cards and expand up to 16. Should you so choose. Okay, 3 oscillators. The first one, analog, saw core with wave folding and PWM, and a sub oscillator. The second is another analog, sawtooth core oscillator with hard sync and FM controls. And the third will be a digital oscillator with wavetables, car plus strong synthesis, and noise and bit crushing. Those feed into a 3 input digital ring mod and an 8-pole multimode dual peak filter. I'm assuming something similar to how Belgrad does its dual peak stuff. You have low pass, band pass, high pass, 2, 4, and 8-pole low pass options. It is also self-resonant or oscillating, so you have another pitch source should you so choose. You have VCA section with hard and soft clipped distortion. You have 4 6-stage envelopes, which is attack, hold, decay, sustain, release. That's 5. Where's the 6th stage? Let me see if I can find this. Well, they say 6-stage envelopes. Maybe it's delay, attack, hold, decay, sustain, release. You can loop them. You can go from logarithmic to exponential in shape. You can also modulate those envelopes. 3 multi-wave LFOs with sync, delay, and rate modulation. 2 external CV inputs. You also have functions including precision adders, multipliers, and a few logic modules that can do things like averaging. You have lag, so I assume maybe a slew processor. You can quantize stuff, and you can route MIDI control changes to modulation destinations. Patch memory, that's all I've got. What's missing?
Seems to be very comprehensive, but what a time to be bringing something out. Is this going to be crowdfunded as well, this one?
Built to order, 20 units a year.
My obviously very predictable next question is how much?
We do have the numbers. US dollars, the four-voice bass synthesizer, is £3,400. I don't think it's unreasonable, but that's a lot of money.
And is it just a desktop unit or does it have keys?
Keys indeed. It's not massive.
How many octaves?
One, two, three. So it's kind of like, is that, that's the normal Hydrosynth kind of size, isn't it, I think?
No, well, I thought there were at least four octaves on a Hydrosynth.
It's been a while.
24, 48. Yeah, so it's a normal one. What they go? I can't even remember. 37.
37, 49, 61, 73, 88. Then 88.
Yeah. So I'm sure the Hydrosynth is, I could be wrong, is at least the 49 key keyboard, but I could be wrong, but I'm sure it's at least four octaves.
This will be a 37 notes.
Okay.
Keyboard. And it looks slightly Arp Odyssey in its colour scheming.
Yeah, I suppose you've got the black and red stripe. Mm. Yes. Is it a US company? For some reason, I thought it was a UK company, or a UK gentleman who was displaying the original.
US-based, apparently.
Okay. But as I say, what a time to be starting a new synth company or launching a new synth.
Yeah, so you kind of have to get in touch with them on Facebook to order one, which is a bit weird. But there is a Sonic State preview that you should definitely go and watch if you want to see how it sounds. And of course, the Nucleus is more well documented on YouTube, and that will likely share some of the DNA, I assume.
So at least there's no synth companies folding to be announced
this week. Not this week, no. Not as far as I know.
A little bit of a respite there.
Yeah, for once. Also, there, since Artisan Electronics are at NobCon, I've also seen a picture on their website, which I haven't seen any YouTube evidence for, but they appear to have a small range of Eurorack modules. I'm not sure if these are self-contained, individually available, or what. Not got the highest resolution picture here, but we seem to have, what's that, one, two, three, four, five different modules. Ooh, six, all with little screens, so I assume highly digital in nature. Ooh, actually, I've noticed some of these are in fact cardboard placeholders, so very early in the development. But we've got neurotoxin, pitch, resonance, shape, inputs. That looks like a filter to me. Neuromotor, rate and phase controls, LFO, I think. Neurogenics, maybe. That's an ADSR, because I can see those letters. You then have Neurorupfer. I don't know. That has inputs, outputs, and CV. Ooh, that might be a VCA. Neuromuffer. Neuromuller. It's going well, isn't it? That's pitch controls. Ooh, waveforms. A digital oscillator of some kind. And lastly, NeuroAxon, which appears to be a MIDI interface. So they're working on stuff, is all I can say. Ooh, they do have a retired products page on their website, which is quite interesting.
So they've got a bit of history behind them.
Yeah, I had no idea. Aha! In fact, those modules are on the retired page. So it's the Neuro range, analog, hybrid, patchable Eurorack modules.
Yeah, so they've had a Eurorack dabble and it hasn't gone well.
Or they got somewhere and kind of left it for the time being. Who knows? So they also did Trentaset, which is duophonic sequencer 37-key desktop synth machine, and Ottava, analog desktop synth, monosynth. Cool stuff. Well, their new machine is the Artisan Electronics Iliad. Go and find that Sonic State video if you want to listen to it. No more interesting news. So that must mean it is time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I'm going to go first, because Pete, you're quite excited about yours, so let's save probably the best till last. Now, mine is a YouTube thing, not necessarily one particular channel. I'm sure you're aware that the algorithm works in mysterious ways. All of a sudden, I was beset by laser light installation modular synth AV show things, and they're super cool. So, one group appears to be called 4040, and the other Tundra. They do some pretty cool stuff with lasers. Atmospheric, modular, in sound generation, apparently. I'll show these to you, Pete. But for our audience, go and find them. 404.0 and Tundra. on YouTube.
Oh yes, I like that sort of thing. Yeah, I like that sort of thing a lot.
There's loads of them. This 404.0 is quite cool because they have their installations, but there's always just a silhouette of a person in there somewhere. It makes them feel really quite creepy and atmospheric and
is
stuff.
Is that all lasers?
I think so, but I have no knowledge of this
kind
of stuff.
I wonder how they're multiplexing them, because it's either a lot of lasers or they're using mirrors. I like the sound they've added to it as well.
This particular one is all modular synth in terms of the sound, which is quite cool.
It looks like the modular synth sound is controlling the laser.
I don't know if they went into detail in the description on that. So yeah, 8.0.1, laser installation by 404.0. 8 laser projectors are driven by random algorithms and the sound is generated with modular synthesizers in real time.
Excellent. It's kind of what we should be doing in the wind tunnel.
We need to. Well, now that there has to be a live performance portion of it, we should get some lights in there.
Well, I'm just thinking I have a massive selection to hand, spookily enough.
We Are Tundra have an interesting one, which is, you know, you get those displays where it's like 10 to 15 LEDs on a spinny thing.
Yes.
And then you have that certain algorithm to make pictures on it.
Yes.
It's like that, but way, way cooler.
Yeah, that's good. And it's in an interesting environment. Is that, are they in the UK?
The first one, 404.0, I believe, are Russian.
Okay.
And these guys seem to be US-based, I think. Or at least some of them are.
It's just the environment they're doing it is very evocative, isn't
it? Well, it certainly is. Moscow Premier went underground in a recently declassified Bunker 703, which is a Soviet defensive military fortification from the Cold War era. And they did this light show in there. So yeah, it's super cool stuff and it's all over my YouTube feed, so I'm happy about that. I'll send you one of them so you can have a gander. Bing! There it is.
Excellent.
Peterino, what have you got for us?
Well, almost as exciting as your one, to be honest. This is a YouTube channel. Again, it only came to my attention last week, and I was very impressed. There's not a lot of videos on there, but it'll explain itself when I tell you about them. So the YouTube channel is simply entitled Engineered Arts. That is also the name of the company that owned the YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel is there primarily to display their products. Now, up to now and continuing, their main products is that they build animatronic humanoids.
Oh my, this is sci-fi.
And they've done a variety over the years, some of which, if you look on the channel, you go, oh, I've seen those, they're used a lot. And over the years, they've developed them to be more and more realistic. And they were famous in producing a set that actually were replicas of real people. And the animatronics, they've got into detail about replicating all the face movements. Their latest one is almost spooky, and it's called Amica. And not only that, the video that actually caught my attention is that they'd linked Amica to GDP3. Are you familiar with GDP3?
It rings a bell, but I have no idea
it's
why.
It's one of those really advanced text-to-speech type of AI programs.
Right.
And the video is various staff members asking Amica really, really random questions and listening to her answers. I say her because it does come across with the female voice, so you get the impression. But it's the extent of the detail of the facial movements that this particular animatronic, I suppose it's a robot, can actually achieve.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
I'll scroll back to their first videos. They had a motion capture project. They called it the Robothespian, which I thought was quite fun.
Yes.
I'm terrified. It's the strange grey-blue of the kind of skin material that they're using, which is very off-putting.
And it does one-to-one. There's a another recent video where it's doing screen capture of a gentleman who is standing side-by-side with the animatronic, and the animatronic's replicating all his facial movements in exquisite detail.
Unsettling.
There is also a Tom Scott video, which is a few months old, and it's of him going to the factory, and they reproduce him.
Oh man, how did I miss that one?
And he does, not him, but his animatronic clone does a product placement advertisement.
That's mad.
That's also quite worth a watch as well.
Oh, there it is. My robot double sells out, so I don't have to. Awesome. Wonderful. I think that's quite a good number of miscellaneous recommendations this week.
Yes, I thought they were all very interesting.
Wonderful. Well, listeners, as always, we greatly appreciate your listenership. Please talk to us on social media. We're lonely. But we'll catch you in the next episode. Farewell.